I call the Agriculture, Finance, and Policy Committee meeting to order on Wednesday, March 1st, 2023. There is a quorum present. We'll move to approval of minutes on February 28th, 2023. Representative Tapke, may I have a motion?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Representative Tapke moves the approval of the minutes for February 28, 2023. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes for February 28, 2023 are approved. Our first bill of the agenda is Representative Purcell, House File 2043 on Farm to School. Representative Purcell, please move your bill.
So moved, Madam Chair.
All right, Representative Purcell moves that House File 2023 be laid over for possible inclusion. I see that you have a DE1 amendment. Would you please move your amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move amendment DE amendment to put the bill in the shape that I would like it with dollar amounts.
All right, discussion to the amendment. Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
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 Opposed say nay. The ayes have it, and the motion prevails. Amendment D1 is adopted. The bill is now in the shape of the other ones. Representative Purcell, please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 2043 is a bill whose previous iterations I supported as a parent, a local foods advocate, and farmer. And it's my honor and privilege to carry this legislation now as a legislator. I have seen firsthand, and you will soon hear from friends and neighbors of mine to this point, how this relatively small investment has and will continue to create larger and larger ripples outward in support of our rural communities, smaller scale farms, and our youngest Minnesotans. In the bill is $5 million per year for our farm to school and early care program. Currently, our funding level is at $800,000 per year, although last year with some federal funds, we were able to give out $4.25 million through a federal grant program. Also included in the bill is $150,000 a year for farm-to-school coordinator at the Department of Ag, and establishes regional local food coordinators who would build on top of the foundation laid by previous farm-to-school efforts in order to scale the purchasing of local foods. Having region-specific coordinators as the point of contact for farmers and interested new markets will help to grow new relationships and scale and the scaling of local foods. As I mentioned, last year, we saw $4.25 million federal grant come to Minnesota to support our farm-to-school program from a federal government grant, and still, there was more demand than that level of funding. External evaluation of the farm-to-school program captured economic impact, documented success, and identified barriers to access and opportunity for improvements. And we have an initial grant evaluation that I'm happy to share. I don't believe was in your packet. And we have additional evaluation included in the bill. And just to note that the Minnesota Department of Agriculture is incredibly supportive of this bill, and we've been working together to strengthen the bill language with their feedback. The ripples of benefits that will emanate from funding this initiative could grow quite large, depending on the level of support we decide to give. I hope that after reading and hearing so much positive testimony this evening, as you will find pages and pages in your packet, I hope that you will all enthusiastically support this bill. But I'd like to now invite two testifiers to speak to this farm to school and early care legislation.
All right, our first testifier is Ben Doherty from Northfield, Minnesota, on Open Hands Farm. Thank you for making the commute to be here today, this evening. Please identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ben Doherty from near Northfield. We farm just outside of Northfield. Thank you for having us here today. I really appreciate you listening to this bill, and also for all your hard work supporting Minnesota farmers and communities. I know you all work very hard and late nights here. Thank you. Since 2006, my wife Erin Johnson and I have owned and operated Open Hands Farm, a 15-acre vegetable farm. We've been LSP members for 18 years as well. We grow most vegetables that can grow here in Minnesota, with an emphasis on carrots, beets, and other roots for fall and winter. We're selling carrots right now to school districts and other customers, school districts being among our biggest customers. We'll probably sell the last carrot from this fall's harvest in May this year. We employ 5 people full-time for 9 months of the year. 4 of them work part-time through the winter, washing and packing carrots and other storage crops. That's a little bit about us. We wanted to say that we believe in investments in farmers and children are among the most simple and intelligent investments that our society can make, and we encourage you to support clearly House File 2043 as a straightforward win-win for Minnesota. Over the years, we at our farm have benefited from several USDA and MDA programs. These will sound familiar to you, hopefully, from low-interest loans with FSA for land and for buildings, to value-added grants to build and improve our coolers for ideal storage for winter vegetables, to EQIP funds from NRCS to help reduce soil erosion, plant pollinator habitat, and improve our irrigation systems. All those programs from USDA and MDA have made a huge difference in our small farm business growing into a more stable and profitable operation. We see this increase in farm-to-school funding as a similar opportunity to help many more farms in Minnesota be strong and thriving like ours, while also helping Minnesota kids to love to learn to love Minnesota foods. I know you all believe in Minnesota agriculture, how important it is all around the state, and I trust and believe that you have high hopes for the future of Minnesota agriculture, that farmers of all sizes and farmers of all crops can continue to thrive and grow and be the bedrock of our communities. As you know, too, a thriving ag economy doesn't just happen. It requires thoughtful investment and support. And supporting schools and using Minnesota-grown foods is one of many critical parts of that hopeful future. Local foods in Minnesota is a $1 billion part of the economy, and helping schools buy more of their ingredients from Minnesota farmers can add significantly to that number. Too often people look at our farm and wonder how we make it, despite struggling under the weight of an overly consolidated farm economy. So I believe we should be creating a future where there could be dozens more farms like ours, contributing and thriving in the state economy. We're investing state funds in feeding kids well, and supporting Minnesota farmers is an easy, easy win-win for all of us. Regarding the importance of the farm-to-school coordinator positions that this bill would also create, changing school lunch and snack programs to be able to handle raw ingredients like our carrots and direct from the farm products, whether it's produce or meats or other things, it's a very complicated task for any size school district. School nutrition directors are asked to feed our kids well with very small staffs and very, very tight budgets. They need more support and funding to do the job that society wants them to do. Then these coordinators would be able to help them do that job much even better. For 8 years now, we've sold vegetables to Minneapolis Public Schools, averaging over $40,000 a year in sales for our small farm business. They have an outstanding farm-to-school program, very highly regarded all around the country. One of the keys to their success is having a farm-to-school coordinator on staff. It doesn't make sense for smaller districts, and maybe even some bigger districts, to have a dedicated person in that role. So one aspect of this bill is to create positions for local food coordinators in regions around the state to help many districts at a time meet the challenges of improving school lunch into something that more kids will want to eat and will help them grow and learn even better. And beyond the lunchroom, to help farmers connect with other wholesale markets and for our various types of produce. So briefly, over the years, we've tried to develop relationships with at least 4 other smaller districts in our area who really want to increase the amount of local food in their meals. Some have had passionate nutrition directors willing to dedicate extra time and energy to the goal. Some have had help from nonprofits or from extension agents. Only one of those 4 has been able to substantially increase their amount of local foods purchasing in a lasting way. I think there are very many districts trying and ready to serve more Minnesota foods and farmers producing it, but the districts are running into problems of menuing and labor and food costs and other restrictions. So investing in their success with both the purchasing funds in this bill and the coordinator positions will make a big, big difference in those districts' success rate. So I encourage you to support, again, these farm-to-school efforts for our farmers, for our kids, and for our futures. Thank you again for your hard work here.
Thank you. Next we have is Amy Hag, Farmer School Liaison. If you can identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Madam Chair and members, good evening, and thank you for this opportunity to testify. My name is Amy Hag, and I am the Farm to School Liaison in Hutchinson, Litchfield, and Vascocado Public School Districts. I live on our farm in Litchfield, where my partner and I operated a vegetable farm until 2019, and I have been a longtime member of the Land Stewardship Project. I believe in the power of community-based food systems, and tonight I will be testifying in support of House File 2043. The districts I represent are three-time recipients of the Agri Farm to School Full Tray Reimbursement Grants. These funds have inspired our kitchens to adopt a more seasonal menu and bring freshly harvested, nutrient-dense foods for our lunch and breakfast programs. Student excitement is growing as they're exposed to new ingredients, community stories, and better-tasting foods. This excitement means increased participation rates, and that means increasing great nutrition for students of all ages. Because of these awards, Hutchinson, Litchfield, and Vascocado Public Schools are on track to purchase over $630,000 in local foods in just three quick years. Our farm to school program feeds over 6,300 students and inspires 12 kitchens and purchases fresh fruits and vegetables, beef, dairy, dry beans, honey, and maple syrup from over a dozen farms and ranches in three counties. As a former farmer, I can confidently say that this significantly impacts the bottom line of each and every farming partner that we work with. Our districts have also been awarded equipment funds from the Farm to School grants. We have purchased industrial food processors, better oven technology, new freezers and coolers. Our success in the cafeterias is without a doubt because of these improvements. This equipment gives our food service staff the tools they need to do these Minnesota high quality ingredients justice. Dollars to improve the kitchen infrastructure and support our local purchases are necessary pieces to establishing a successful farm to school program. However, I'm especially here tonight to speak to the importance of creating regional local food coordinator positions across our great state. We have been successful because my director has carved out space within her budget for the coordinating role that I have. And in talking to other districts who have reached out to me for support, this is not a commonly supported option. Having a focused coordinator has helped our districts in a very rural, isolated part of the country take our farm to school program from 0 to 60 in three very quick years. Coordinators like me can build relational capital that will revolutionize our food system here in Minnesota. Folks in this role can be educated about food safety concerns and best practices for both farmers and these kitchens, replicate successes among classrooms, kitchens, and farms to make meaningful change quickly, share stories of specific crop varieties with staff so they can buy in and be awesome ambassadors for kids, consult with a nutrition director to design a seasonal menu that reflects the specific abundance of farmers nearby, and plug into statewide Farm to School and Harvest of the Month networks for support. Most importantly, these coordinators can be the point person for BIPOC, emerging, and otherwise marginalized farmers to access scalable markets that will be important to their farm success. With this kind of people power, farmers and ranchers will be able to sell tons and tons of food back into their communities, providing better nutrition to our most important school-age kids. Last year, we saw a federal grant of $4.25 million offered up to Minnesota, and that was still not enough to meet the demand that schools asked for. We can choose to notice this momentum and help create a lasting community-based food system that works for farmers, that works for small business owners, and that works for institutions. We can choose to make space for farmers' stories in our schools, and we can choose to invest this historic surplus in community feeding community. Let's do that. Thank you for engaging in this work and for allowing me to testify tonight.
Thank you. I don't see any further testifiers. Do we have anyone from the public that would like to testify? All right. We'll move to discussion of the bill. Any discussion? I have a question, Representative Purcell. Do you know how many school districts are participating in this farm to school program, or if you know how many are interested in participating?
Thank you for the question, Madam Chair. I don't have that number off the top of my head, but there may be someone in the audience who can help me with that answer.
Perhaps someone from the department can? Yes. All right, if you can identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Ashley Bress, I'm Assistant Director of the Ag Marketing and Development Division of the Department of Agriculture. Madam Chair and members, that's a great question. Although I don't have exact data on how many school districts across the state are participating in Farm to School, the data that I do have relates to that last round of grants that we're in the process of awarding right now. During that application process, we had 122 schools and school districts apply and are in the process of awarding grants to 116 of those.
Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Vang. Thank you, Representative Purcell. I'm going to need some clarification because I'm like, wow. Okay, so right now, the funding is 800,000, correct? And the request is 5 million? That's quite an increase. Tommy, where are you going to get the money from?
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Harder. This would come from the ag budget, this committee's budget. I would love to appropriate much more than that because we see that it has a triple benefit, the triple bottom line of supporting our farmers, our rural communities, and our students. We see that the need is out there, and there's really, it's that missing link part of making sure the farmers know whom to contact to then make the connection with the schools. If that answers your question.
Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Vang. You mean taxpayers. It'll be taxpayers. Tell me, I need to know more information. This is a lot of money. How does this compete or compare with the bill that was passed, the Lunches for All? How does that compete with that? Does it compete? Is this completely different? I really need help clarifying. I mean, I get it. The kids need to eat. We all know that, right? But I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around the dollar amount. I really am. So I need clarification. Is there competition there between the two programs then?
Representative Purcell?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Harder. I know much less about the school meal part. I would love if those school meals that we're providing had more of our local produce, our local meat and veg and dairy and all of that that we talked about. I know in this committee we have seen proposals go to in much greater dollar amounts to some of the alphabet soup that I can't think of off the top of my head, all the different programs and projects that we have. So in the grand scheme of things, this doesn't feel like a large amount of money to me. And I think this is an investment that is worth making, is my take on it.
Representative Harder?
Thank you. I have another question. Thank you, Chair Vang. So help me also to understand. So the program is planning to hire a coordinator at the state level. So how is that handled now? Because not only are we looking at increasing the dollars for this program, but now we're increasing the size of government by adding more employees. So how is that handled now with that particular position?
Representative Purcell?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks for the question. So my understanding is right now within the Department of Agriculture, there's an employee who only gets to spend about a third of their time on this coordinating position. So in the proposal, there'd be a full-time person who gets to dedicate their time. Again, that person has seen a lot more requests for their time than they are able to give it because they've got all these other obligations within the Department of Ag. And then to have these regional coordinators, which is not an FTE attached to it because, like the testifier here, it might be someone already embedded in the community, maybe doing this part-time can work for them. It's more about that community connection. I wrote down when she talked about, you know, community-based food systems. But inside Department of Ag, there is a person who's a coordinator, but they can't give it their full-time equivalent.
A final follow-up, Representative Harder?
That's all for now, thank you.
Okay. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the bill author, we're talking about there's more demand than meets supply or something. So tell me, is the demand from schools wanting more access to this type of program, or I think about the farms in the area around a school, there's got to be a finite number of vegetable or operations that would have produce to sell to a school. So what's the balance there, and talk about the demand.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Lead Anderson, for the question. So my understanding, so like very, very close, not in my district, but close to where I live, is Ferndale Farm, Ferndale Market. So they grow turkeys there. And they already have a pretty vast distribution system. So I don't know that necessarily it's, you know, like only farms that are really quite close to each school. Someone who has been involved on the implementation side perhaps can speak to that more. But I think where we're seeing the demand is coming from the schools. And then in the governor's budget, when he proposed not increasing the funds, but he did increase the qualifiable folks. So this has been a K through 12 program. And the idea is that early care centers, daycare centers, those types of facilities would also like access to this. And so that's sort of a potential increase in where the even more demand than is currently kind of applicable may be coming from. But that's where we're seeing, not so much on the farmer side, because Ben and Aaron have been doing this for some time, because in Minneapolis we've seen that dedicated staff person and the dedicated funding. It's hard to make a plan to plant as many carrots and root vegetables that they do for selling to an institution, and just thinking, well, is this going to just be here for 1 year? So at least this funding, we're hoping then can be, you know, at least over the biennium to give some stability. But we haven't seen necessarily the demand from the farmers, because it's like, not sure what the future of it is, but we are absolutely seeing the demand from the schools.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Madam Chair. And I know you don't have your target yet, but we're really getting into the Agri Fund with all these bills that are really asking for significant increases in funding. And now, Representative Purcell, to talk about the actual funding, if my math is correct here, of the 5.7 million that would go out the first year, over a million of that is going to go for admin, the Department of Agriculture, and $500,000 for grants to other organizations that will, I'm not quite sure what they're going to do, grants to help review the program or whatever, but can you walk through some of the admin costs? They seem really high, over $1 million of your 5.7 million.
Representative Purcell. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Lead Anderson. I will do my best to do that. So I think we're looking at part of the DE amendment that is included in this. So the $150,000 is that statewide coordinator position, moving that to just a one dedicated full-time person. The $50,000 for the evaluation, and then I think you're looking at in the DE1 amendment line 1.21, item 4, that $500,000. So that is to have those regional folks. So not necessarily. Well, I guess my understanding, and maybe our researcher can help me out here, that it may not be that then these people are employed by the Department of Agriculture, but they might be employed elsewhere. I guess I'm not clear on that. If you might help House Research.
Mr. Sullivan.
Madam Chair and Representative Purcell, under Clause 4, the $500,000 each year is for grants to outside organizations that would provide community-based regional marketing assistance to farmers. So those would be state-funded folks, but they would not be state employees as this is drafted.
Thank you. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. So again, walk me through the purpose. I mean, that's a lot of money, $500,000 for outside organizations to advise farmers. Tell me how that's all going to work.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Anderson. This is a ballpark number, a starting place number. Happy to talk with you if this is not where we think this needs to be. I think, at least when we were running our small-scale diversified farm, it's hard to know what's out there and what is available and how to access these different markets. So it seems to me some money needs to be allocated there just to have the outreach in the community and have someone ideally who is really embedded in the community to know, you know, hey, these folks over here, they're wanting to grow more, you know, tomatoes, and maybe there's a potential market now with the institution. So that's my understanding, but I am not wedded to that number and would be happy to chat more about that as this goes into an omnibus potentially.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Again, yeah, I would suggest or advise that, you know, the lady that talked to Chia was working with three different school districts. That seemed to be a really efficient way to expand a program. And I would think going more in that direction and less in this direction of grants to organizations would be money better spent.
All right. Hearing no further questions or discussion, closing remarks, Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. And thank you to all the amazing supporters and testifiers from this evening and over the years. Adequately funding our farm to school and early care program is a win-win-win for our farmers, our students, and our communities, especially our rural communities. By keeping these dollars circulating in our small towns and rural places by providing another market for farmers who are not near the metro area. The Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy and the University of Minnesota's Extension recent evaluation report on the first round of this grant found that every dollar spent by schools through this grant generated an additional dollar of impact in local economic activity. Selling to schools can be a stepping stone for farmers to expand their business model beyond the direct sales, to include wholesale markets. As you heard, farmers can be hesitant to invest in the infrastructure and equipment that could take their operation to the next level to participate in farm-to-school markets, precisely because this funding is not always guaranteed. Increasing the funding to $5 million a year would allow farmers to feel secure in the market, allow more schools to participate in the program, and feed more students and children healthy, nutritious food. This level of funding is supporting transformational change in the farm and food system and for our rural communities. And as a parent whose children has gotten to participate in this program, as a grower and as a neighbor, I support this bill and I encourage additional conversation. Thank you.
All right. Hearing none, Representative Purcell renews her motion that House File 2043 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion. And House File 2043 as amended is laid over. The next bill we have is House File 1981, Representative Ream on Good Food Access Program funding. Since you're a member of the committee, Representative Ream, if you could please move your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to start out by saying today is the first day of meteorological spring. So I wanted to wish everyone a happy first day of spring. I am honored to speak to you today about HF 1981, the Good Food Access Program. It's a program that started in 2016. And the challenge that we have been facing since then is that hundreds of thousands of Minnesotans currently live in areas where they have limited or no access to healthy foods, such as fruits and vegetables, low-fat dairy, whole grains, and lean meats and poultries. Oftentimes, we call these areas food deserts. More than 340,000 Minnesotans face both distance and income as a barrier to obtaining healthy, affordable food. Approximately 235,000 Minnesotans live more than 10 miles away from a large grocery store or supermarket. An additional estimated 40,000 Minnesota households do not have a vehicle and live more than 1 mile from a grocery outlet. This means that people, particularly those who are lower income and on fixed incomes, face much greater challenges finding affordable foods necessary to maintain a healthy diet. And for those living in these regions, limited access to healthy and affordable foods results in disproportionately higher rates of obesity, diabetes, and other diet-related health problems. So the bill before us today will be increasing the funding, and I have two people here to testify if they would like to come forward. I'd like to start with, if I could call Leah forward. Sorry, I can't pronounce your last name.
Hi.
All right. Before we go to testifier, I believe, Representative, your motion is to lay over House File 1981 for possible inclusion.
Yes, that is it. Thank you.
All right. Lee Gardner from Hunger Solutions, please identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Hi. Thank you. My name is Leah Gardner. I work at Hunger Solutions Minnesota, and I'm here to share a little bit about our work in supporting the Good Food Access Program. So it's something that I've been working to support since it was first initiated back in 2016 is when we passed the legislation to first fund this. And the reason that we've been working on this is because we know that there are many Minnesotans that have very limited or no access to things such as fresh fruits and vegetables and meat and dairy products in their community. So we know, unfortunately, that the issue of grocery stores in local communities is something that has been headed in the wrong direction now since well before this initiative started. As of right now, about 53 out of 87 Minnesota counties have seen a loss in the number of grocery stores that they have. So that's sort of the trajectory that we're on. I'm afraid it's probably actually gotten worse since the last data points that I have available. And this is something that impacts people of all ages. It's something that's an issue here in the Twin Cities area, in rural communities and suburban communities. It's an issue all across the state. And when Minnesotans are facing both income and distance barriers to food, that also unfortunately does result in health disparities for many people living in those regions. And oftentimes we're talking about seniors, and in many cases we're talking about children that are disproportionately impacted by this. Right now, at our last estimate, there were more than 340,000 Minnesotans that are facing food access challenges in Minnesota. When we first started this program at $250,000 per year, that was enough for us to be able to do some really meaningful work, including providing technical assistance to grocers and small food retailers, as well as providing some small equipment grants. And what that has been able to do is for a traditional grocery store, maybe in a small town that's on a really thin margin, they've been able to upgrade their refrigeration and things like that in order to, you know, spend less money on that energy, have more money to actually turn a profit, and that's helped some stores be able to stay around where we may have seen more slide into losing more stores in some of those communities. It's also created some really innovative solutions. So we've been able to help get mobile markets and mobile CSAs and things like that off the ground so that we can get food to people instead of having people come to food, which may not always be an option. The challenge has been at $250,000. That's sort of been the limitation of what we could do. But back when we first initiated this effort, what we had always hoped to do is also create something like a revolving loan opportunity where we could actually help a new enterprise come in where none exists, or where maybe a grocer has left, but there's a new interested entrepreneur that could come in. So that's the type of potential that I think we could really see if we were able to fund this at the $2.5 million or something in that range, is we could start actually providing revolving loans and get new enterprises in the mix that are interested but don't have the access to capital. And the last thing I'll note is that we've definitely been talking in the past with some folks that I think would be interested in providing a private partnership to public dollars in order to do some of that. So we might be able to leverage some different resources into this program beyond just what the state would invest. So I think there's just a ton of potential of investing more in this program. The need is certainly there. I think the next testifier will speak maybe more in detail to this, but demand has far exceeded dollars available every year since this has come to be. And that's just for the existing technical assistance and equipment grants, but we could obviously do much more. So that is what I have to share with you today, and happy to answer questions. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Our next testifier is Zach Page from the U of M. If you can identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Hi, my name is Zachary Page. I am affiliated with RSDP, or Rural Sustainable Development Partnership. We're a part of the University of Minnesota Extension, and we have regional offices where we serve each community in our region and five regions in the state, and we support grassroots community ideas to improve sustainability in four sectors: sustainable agriculture, community resiliency, natural resources, and community vitality. So I'll just be talking a little bit about my experience with the Good Food Access Program. I've known Leah since 2016, when the funds first started, and have had a unique experience with working with a lot of different aspects of it. So I worked with the White Earth community for about 10 years now, and then when in 2017, we're just starting our White Earth Food Sovereignty Initiative, which is believes in a strong, affordable, localized food system rooted in Anishinaabe tradition, vitality, and holistic health to the sovereignty of the White Earth tribe. We work with partners within the tribe to basically strengthen food sovereignty and increase the food access. So writing the first food access grant in 2017, we were awarded approximately $40,000, and I was the writer and also the manager of the project. We purchased a mobile market. We're almost immediately able to purchase local foods and then deliver them to there's White Earth's huge, it's 36 miles by 36 miles. We also did a food sovereignty survey showing people on average travel 60 miles to get their foods, and 218 people were surveyed for that. And we just saw like the immediate benefit of we were able to purchase local foods from local farmers. We're also able to have culturally appropriate foods, wild rice, maple syrup, but also food staples like corn and beans and bison and walleye. And just looking at the kids' faces when I was like on the truck, being able to have Red Lake walleye as a market that's coming essentially to their community really was just a really positive experience to see the food truck coming down and then staying in those communities for a few hours to make sales for the market, and then also have a route that went to all the communities in the tribe. Then we also wrote the grant again in 2017, and this also helped the Manoman farmers market infrastructure. The market, as we've seen the market grow since then. And Manoman itself, according to the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation health studies, is 87 out of 87 counties for food access, healthy food access, I'm sorry. So in the county that is what at that time was the least accessible for healthy food access, we saw this positive impact there. And also after that, in 2021, I was given the opportunity to be an evaluator for the program. And I saw just that there were many people that were applying that there was about half that got funded, essentially, 14, I think, out of 30. And then going on to Leah's point of the program having about this like $250,000 cap. Just seeing the awareness growing throughout the years from 2016 to 2020, there was 784,000 requested in 2021, with about that 250,000 being awarded. And then in 2022, there's 2.38 million requested, with still 250,000 being awarded. And the RSDP Rural Grocery Report also states, I'm just going to state some facts and then I'll close it out here. 44% of stores are over 50 years old. 89% of those rural grocery stores, and rural means in our language, serving a population of 2,500 or less people. 89% of those stores are average 16 years or older. And 49% of rural grocers are concerned they might go out of business in the next 5 years. And just to close out on a positive story and where White Earth community is going is after this mobile market and after this farmer's market we've seen, they actually were awarded some funds to have a feasibility study to have their own grocery store and co-op. But that's going to need a little bit more investment that they're working on. And so thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Yeah. I don't see any scheduled testifier. Do we have anyone from the public that would like to testify?
Okay.
All right. To the discussion, the bell. Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Vang. Thank you, Representative Ream. So you talked about, what was it, what do you call it, food?
Food desert.
Okay.
Yes.
It's an interesting word. There are many cities in my district that do not have a grocery store that people can go to. Might be a convenience store that might have something. One of probably many reasons why some small towns are losing stores, it could be, you know, population. But in Minnesota, there are so many rules and regulations around businesses that it stifles a lot of people to continue, which really hurts the community, wherever that it is. You're asking for quite a bit more on this particular bill. Can you please go over the funding? So you're right now, the program is receiving $450,000 and the request is 2.5 million. Do you know what the history has been as far as funding this program over the last few years? Do you have that?
Well, I know, so the bill was passed in 2016. So I don't have the figures in front of me, but I can ask for someone else maybe to help me answer that.
Perhaps someone from the department can help answer the question.
The report, yeah.
If you can identify yourself before the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Ashley Bress, Assistant Director of Ag Marketing and Development. I apologize, I don't have those exact numbers going back in front of me, but I'd be happy to get those for the committee. Last year, fiscal year 2022, was probably one of our most competitive years yet, though. In that year, we received 69 applications requesting about $2.39 million. That year, we reserved a little bit of money for Good Food Access Technical Assistance. So we were able to award 19 projects for about $380,000. I think Mr. Page also gave some numbers on fiscal year 21. Our applications were down a little bit that year. I think that was a really hard year for grocery stores to be making in investments. So I think that year we're looking more about $750,000 in requests. We're able to fund about half of those. Going back historically, this has been one of our most competitive programs that's a part of the Agri portfolio. But I'd be happy to get those exact numbers for the committee.
Representative Harder?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair Vang. Yes, that would be helpful. May I ask one more question?
Yes.
Can you please don't move. Can you please go over the application process? How do people apply? What is the criteria? Thank
Ms. Bress.
You.
Yeah, Chair Vang, members of the committee, that application process is actually open right now for about another 2 weeks. So we are accepting applications through a request for proposals. So we have that document is listed on or is available on our website. We ask retailers to provide us with a bunch of information. We ask for things like, you know, what equipment, what upgrades are they trying to make? What communities are they serving? How are they reaching out to people in their community who have limited access, whether that's people who are unable to drive, who are homebound, you know, or whatever access that they may have, they happen to be lacking. You know, really, really asking for them to show us that they are ready to take on this project, you know, that they've done their homework, they've done the business piece of it, and they're ready to move forward. One of the interesting things about this app, about this particular project, is the location eligibility requirements, in that the grocery store or the retailer needs people to show us how they are located in or serving a food desert or a low or moderate income area. And if they're serving a low or moderate income area that's not a food desert, then they need to be showing us and telling us how they're reaching some of those specialized populations so that they don't otherwise have access. You know, some of the cases like that, we're really talking about the elderly or people with disabilities.
Representative Harder. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to either testify or maybe the department person, I'd like to know, you know, the idea here is good to help a grocery store in a smaller area put in coolers or whatever they would need to provide more healthy foods for people. Do you have any numbers going back when the program first started in 2017, the first year the grants went out, of those stores that received a grant from this program, how many are still in operation?
Ms. Bress?
Chair Vang, Representative Anderson, you know, I don't have those numbers in front of me. I'd be happy to go back and see if I can get at least a ballpark. I wouldn't have data on all of them, but I could get you a ballpark on that.
All right. Further discussion? Hearing none. Closing remarks, Representative Reen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I did a little research on the Good Food Access Fund program, and I found some interesting information about how it has helped different communities. In my own district in 2019, the Chaska Market, a small locally owned Hispanic grocery store, which serves the Latino community of Chaska and the surrounding area, they were able to purchase an open produce cooler for meat and cheese, and then a three-door freezer so that they could stock, sell, and promote nutritious foods throughout the store. And then I found in Tofty, I don't know if you guys go up on the North Shore, but Tofty has a general store, and that's a small family-owned business. In 2020, they were able to replace an aging walk-in cooler with a new cooler freezer case, and it turns out that general store is the only SNAP authorized store within 28 miles. So that's another food desert. You don't think of that area as being a food desert, but, you know, the only SNAP authorized store within 28 miles, that would be tough, I would think. So these food deserts are not only in Northeast Minneapolis and in the urban areas, but they're also in the suburbs and, you know, in outstate Minnesota. And the need is there. And I don't know if you were able to look at the letters that we received in support of this, but we received a letter from the Minnesota Grocers Association. I've been told that that's very unusual. And they're supporting this. And I can read a bit of what they said. They said the changes happening in today's food industry are enormous. Market innovations continue to expand. Offerings like delivery, curbside, and personal shopping are becoming more popular. The addition of these new customer services also creates constant challenges for our members. To succeed in today's market, you must answer customers' expectations. This can be particularly challenging for smaller, locally owned retailers who may not have the technology, staff, or facilities available to swiftly adjust to market demands. Some communities are losing their local grocer, and we know that when a grocer leaves the community, Main Street suffers. That is why it is critically important to expand funding to the Good Food Access Fund. And I've been told that, last year there was more demand than we were able to accommodate. So I think this is a great program, and I think it will be well received. Like I said, the Minnesota Grocers Association supports it. Minnesota Farmers Market Association supports it. Let's see. I just think it's a great program, and I would like to see this laid over for inclusion.
All right. House File 1981 is laid over for possible inclusion. The next bill we have is House File 1637, Representative Sensenmira, on urban agriculture grants. Representative Sensenmira, please move your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So moved.
All right. To the House File 1637, be laid over for possible inclusion. To your bill, Representative Sensenmira.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. As a member from the Metro representing South Minneapolis, I'm proud to present to you tonight House File 1637, which is urban agriculture grants. I have a number of urban farms in the district that I represent. I know that these farms often act as hubs for the community. They supply our communities with healthy food, and they also do, I think, a really great job of connecting with the young people in our community and supplying young people with education and agriculture that is often hard to get. We know that for aspiring and emerging farmers, oftentimes land acquisition is a barrier, and so these people are making farms sometimes on parking lots, sometimes on vacant lots, but they are really doing the work of transforming communities. I know that I myself have witnessed a young person who, did not have access to land, did not have access to farming, try a tomato. They were very hesitant. They thought that they hated tomatoes. But turns out they had just had, the kind of maybe tomatoes that you often see in like school lunches. And they had a homegrown tomato and, it was delicious and had that experience of kind of what it means to cultivate your own food and how you take a different pride in that food and how that food often takes different. So that's why I believe in this kind of program. Urban Agriculture Grant Program was established during the 2017 legislative session, with funding coming out of the Agri Appropriation beginning in fiscal year 2018. The annual appropriation has grown from originally it was up to $250,000 a year, to now it is up to $600,000 per year. Throughout the lifespan of the program, it has been one of the most competitive agri programs, with just 20% of the total request fulfilled in fiscal year 2022. This program funds youth agricultural education and agriculture-connected community development in urban and peri-urban areas, projects that serve communities with populations over 5,000 or that are located within the boundaries of federally recognized tribal land and serving tribal communities are eligible. The program can fund equipment, physical improvements, and staff time to develop and carry out the programming. Program grants range from $2,500, so a small, modest grant, to about $50,000 for the larger grants. Programs have been as varied as assisting Mankato Area Public Schools build a greenhouse to reestablish their agriculture program, implementing a micro farm aquaponic system within the Prairie Island Indian community, creating urban agriculture campuses in North Minneapolis, and starting an urban 4-H club focused on youth in St. Paul. Just today, I had some young people and school administrators come visit me from Roosevelt High School in my district. They have both a culinary program at their school and also an urban farm. And so they are kind of, through some of this grant funding, looking at ways that they can use the food that students grow, then have students make the food in their culinary class, and then sell that food, in a small cafe. So this is really an example of how we can create some of these these small sustainable food systems, how we can engage young people from our community, and how we can supply people in our community with healthy food. I have a list that I think I'll ask the chair to send out later of all of the different agriculture, urban agriculture grant past projects. They're really amazing to read about. They really are from all over the state. You know, the last thing I'll say is that if you look at the grant recipient list, one thing that really, you know, kind of stuck out to me is that a lot of these grants go to immigrant or refugee communities, communities that often have really rich histories of farming. And so they're really building on the knowledge that so many of these communities have as a way to really connect young people with that culture of farming that can sometimes be lost in urban areas. So I think this is really important work. Sadly, none of the organizations were able to join us tonight, but I do have members of the department here that are, you know, happy to answer questions. Thank you.
Could someone from the department come testify about how many grant recipients have received this funding and where have you, I guess, where the growth is right now?
Ashley Bress, Department of Agriculture. Madam Chair, that's a great question. This program really has been one of our most competitive to date. When we first started to fund this back in fiscal year 18, we received requests of about $1.3 million for the up to $250,000 available. Last year, the year that we most recently completed, we had requests of about $2.3 million for about $551,000 that we had. And then this year, our review committee met last week on one of those really snowy days, and they parsed down $2.7 million in requests onto about $551,000. I can't tell you on that one exactly how many projects we're funding yet, since those are still under review, and we're still letting those applicants know. But that really was one of the most competitive review sessions we have been in. And I think this is one of those review sessions that the evaluators in there would have been comfortable recommending funding for more of those projects if funds were available. Overall, in the 6 years, I think it is, that we've been doing this program, we've been able to award as few as 17% of the grant requests and as much as 26%. So a pretty competitive program overall.
And Madam Chair, if I can just add, if you look at the past grant recipients, it's about 15 grants per year.
All right. Seeing no further testifiers, anyone from the public that would like to testify? All right. Discussion to the bill. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, I've had a chance over the years to tour some of these urban gardens in downtown Minneapolis, I think they were. And amazing to see the kind of wonderment of the young folks who are seeing their seeds grow and develop into a crop. And the one thing that I always thought was not as supportive as it should have been was from the city itself. I think the toughest thing was to find a vacant lot or a place to grow their garden. And it seemed like the city wasn't real receptive or helpful in finding these small spots to grow a garden. So what's happening on that front? Is the city behind this? Is Minneapolis helping out, trying to find places to grow these gardens? And how is that all working?
Representative Sensamira?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Aronson. I think that's a great question. You know, I have not heard about, like, necessarily city initiatives around taking vacant lots. I think that's a great idea. I think it's something, you know, I would like to see the city put more effort into. You know, I can tell you that maybe some people, you know, have heard about, there's a big kind of fight actually right now in Minneapolis. I think Economic Development heard a bill today for there's a large city-owned land in Minneapolis in the East Phillips neighborhood, and currently there's kind of a conflict between the city and community around what that land should be, and the idea from the community is that it should be an urban farm. So I think that there's a lot of appetite from community to take the vacant lands, to take the vacant lots that we pass by, that we've seen kind of, you know, go unused for years and turned that into farmland. And if there's anything the legislature can do to, you know, support the city in doing that, I think we should.
Representative Anderson? Representative Chow.
Thank you, Chair Vang. So I'll make a comment. In Northern California, where I spent some time, particularly in Sacramento, the city became really ag-friendly. And so they allowed residents in the city to have up to 9 hens, laying hens, because, you know, people are into, you know, homegrown eggs. But not only that, but what they did do was they did allow these lots to be farmed in the inner cities. And so what that comes with, that comment that you made about, you know, that person tasting that tomato or whatever for the first time, I got a lesson growing strawberries on my 5 acre to sell on the road because I didn't know there was different types of species of strawberries to be sold versus the ones being picked to be sold in grocery store versus the ones where you picked, you pick your own, right? Because the ones that you pick your own on your farm actually is a lot ripe, a lot sweeter, and more tasteful and a lot healthier. And then that goes back to education, right? Because a lot of times when we go to a grocery store, we look for perfect tomatoes and perfect cucumbers. And what we don't realize is that when you go to the farmer's market and you see the variety of tomatoes that's not perfect and these are imperfection, those are actually because it's being homegrown by farmers like what you mentioned. And I think this is an important bill that you're trying to propose here. And, I would support it. So thank you.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As a person who grew vegetables on parking lots in Minneapolis, I want to highlight the city of Minneapolis does have a homegrown, it's called Homegrown Minneapolis program to try to connect land access is one of the big challenges. Farming is hard enough when you're not trying to do it on asphalt. There are some of those initiatives happening, but Representative Sensenmayer, I think you talked about that there is a project happening in Mankato. So I think just to expand our ideas about who urban agriculture is for, who it includes, there are parking lots all over the place. I'm not sure I would recommend that, but in our case, we worked with a local neighborhood redevelopment group, and we had to move. This parking lot was available. Oh, okay, next season we're going to build something on it. Okay, now this one is available. So land tenure is really difficult, but there's a lot of opportunity to use those spaces. So not particularly a question, Madam Chair, but just from my personal experience to share. Thank you.
All right. Any further discussion? Closing remarks, Representative Sensenmayer?
Just that I would ask this committee, you know, to favorably consider this proposal for inclusion in the omnibus. We know that land acquisition is a barrier, and I think that's something that this committee really wants to work on. But in the meantime, we have farmers all across our state that are ready to go, that are ready to be creative, that are ready to start small in a parking lot, to start small on a vacant lot. And I think, you know, to highlight this the grant program really, you know, considers cities above 5,000, right? So that is Minneapolis, but that's also a lot of other places across our state where we should be, you know, incentivizing small-scale farming. And I think this is one way to do that. So thank you.
All right. Representative Sensenmayer renews her motion that House File 1637 be laid over for possible inclusion. House File 1637 is laid over for possible inclusion. All right, members. I know it's been a long day for everyone. We are on to our final agenda item, House File 1744, Representative Sensenmayer, the Good Acre Grant Funding. If you can please move your bill, Representative Sensenmayer.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So moved.
All right, Representative Sensenmayer moves that House File 1744 be laid over for possible inclusion. To your bill?
Yeah, thank you. So I'm happy to present House File 1744. This is funding to the Good Acre to support with their local emergency assistance farmer fund. We know that communities of color in our state are more than twice as likely to be facing hunger. And we know that expanding market access so that farmers of color can be part of getting locally grown and culturally specific crops into the hunger relief pipeline is key to building a sustainable food economy in our state. This program through the Good Acre does just that. I would encourage everyone on this committee to at some point try to do a tour of the Good Acre if you have not already. It's just about 10 minutes away from us, and it acts as a food hub. It offers support to farmers both in their capacity building, the ability to bring their goods to market, the ability to store their goods. And with this program, solves two really amazing problems, which is supporting emerging farmers who often, face barriers, whether it's language barriers, whether it's, kind of economic barriers, whether it's barriers in terms of kind of knowing where to sell your products. And then they also bring that food and give it to people who really need it. And so they provide hunger relief. They have a small, modest appropriation previously, and so they're looking to increase that because of all the emerging farmers that they have been able to work with. And I would like to now yield the rest of my time to the testifiers who can tell you more about this amazing program.
All right, our first testifier is David Van Eckholt, from Farm Program Director from the Good Acre. If you can please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is David Van Eckhout. I'm the Farm Program Director for the Good Acre, a food hub based in Falcon Heights, Minnesota. Before coming to the Good Acre, my wife and I operated our own organic vegetable farm serving the Twin Cities area for over 15 years. In my current role, I'm able to bring a farmer's perspective into much of our work at the Good Acre. I'm here today on behalf of our organization and the many farmers we work with to express support for House File 1744, a grant to the Good Acre for the Local Emergency Assistance Farmer Fund. LEAF began in 2020 as a multi-organizational collaboration to support emerging vegetable farmers due to the loss of their typical markets caused by the pandemic. Many farmers were able to pivot to online sales and other new opportunities. But for farmers with language barriers, technology challenges, or lack of emergency funds, there was a need for a program that would support these farmers through a challenging year. At the same time, hungry families were lining up all over the state to get access to food as employees were laid off and schools were closed. In conjunction with our partners, we developed the LEAF program where farmers accepted into the program are guaranteed a fixed amount of market rate sales. The produce is then donated to multiple hunger relief organizations as well as directly to consumers through community school-based distribution sites. What has made LEAF such a successful program is that it was designed by farmers for farmers. Our program partners and I brought the farmer perspective to the development of the program, emphasizing the needs of farmers in order to make the program a success. Meeting the farmers where they were at was our constant goal. In the last 3 years, LEAF has purchased over $784,000 worth of produce from 88 participating farms. Those purchases have resulted in over 435,000 pounds of number one quality fresh produce being donated to hunger relief organizations for distribution to more than 80 sites throughout Minnesota. In addition, farmers who began working with us because of the LEAF program have gone on to sell the Good Acre's other wholesale customers almost $2 million in produce over the past 3 years, providing a stable and consistent market opportunity that builds economic mobility. LEAF has turned out to be much more than an emergency pivot during the pandemic. It has become a powerful program that has had a major impact. LEAF provides a new market opportunity for farmers, provides a source of fresh, culturally relevant produce for communities in need, teaches farmers new skills for selling to wholesale markets, reduces food waste on farms, helps farmers manage risk, and has become a model for other communities to develop similar programs. We are honored and grateful that the LEAF program has been included in the governor's budget recommendations again this year. State officials have spoken on multiple occasions of the importance of the LEAF program and urged its expansion. Each year, demand outweighs the available funding for the program. In this bill, we are requesting $400,000 in annual funding, with up to 25% of that amount allocated annually to cover direct farmer technical assistance and training, logistical support, and development of pilot programs in greater Minnesota. We are also requesting $100,000 in fiscal year 24 for pilot program purchasing for the pilots. Since its beginning, LEAF has maintained its focus on farmers by listening to our farm partners. This farmer engagement has shaped the program to provide more flexible delivery times, introduce new culturally relevant crops, and to adjust pricing to better meet market conditions. 100% of the farmers who participate in LEAF want the program to continue. And speaking as a farmer, I know that getting 100% of farmers to agree on anything is a challenge. LEAF isn't an idea, it's a real program that is working right now to help farmers. Please continue to this important work by supporting the LEAF program at a sustainable level in House File 1744. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer questions.
All right, thank you. Our next testifier is Gajal Berry from Big River Farms. If you can please identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Sorry, I just had a nerd moment. My name is Gajal Berry. I am the farm director at Big River Farms. We are a program of the Food Group of Minnesota, which is an institution that is a nonprofit institution that helps with hunger relief and provides affordable grocery options for the community. And so the LEAF program is super important to our program because it doesn't just addresses the hunger relief side of the food access for the communities, but it also provides market support for our farmers. So Big River Farms is an incubator training program for farmers, mainly BIPOC, immigrant, and Native American farmers. And our farm is located in Marine on St. Croix, and we provide land access-based training. So we don't just do the theoretical education, but farmers also have an opportunity to access land at the farm, and they learn how to grow there. So it's basically a farm school with direct experience, and we are fully staffed, so we provide that technical assistance and that ongoing education with farmers. And we have about 15 to 20 farmers or farm teams that we support a year, and that's translated to 35 to 50 farmers because it really depends if the families, how big the size of the farm teams are. Sometimes we get one team is only one person, and then the other team is like 10 plus groups of people that are, you know, within that team. So the LEAF program has been an essential part. You heard David name there are at least 88 farmers that or farms that they support. At least 10% of those farms are from Big River Farmers. So Big River Farmers who are currently in our education program, as well as farmers who have graduated. So the LEAF program doesn't just address the market access for farmers, but it is also a gateway for farmers and encouragement for them to continue to support the local food system. So many of these farmers, there's a lot of barriers for them in order for them to be able to grow to a certain scale and go to the market, like farmers market. It takes a lot of work to pack it up and to even have like access to storage facilities, to have access to technical assistance, not knowing what kind of income you're gonna be making from that weekly farmer's market visit. But with the LEAF, it's fixed. It is a guaranteed income that the farmers have hoped for when they do, knowing that they don't know how much they're gonna make from farmer's market, but they continue to grow because it is a passion for them. It is a lifestyle for them, but the LEAF program also supports that income for them that they're looking forward to so that they can continue to do all those things that we need in order for us to be supported in our local food system. And then on the hunger relief side, the food group, we serve over 220 local food shelves, and that food that we get from the LEAF program goes to those food shelves without charge. And so because we have a really strong collaboration and partnership, we're able to move all of that very efficiently. And more importantly, the people who run the LEAF program are not just people who, you know, have this infrastructure and space, but these are culturally competent people, which is super important in order for you to serve the amount of farmers that you serve who speak multiple languages and be able to have that compassion and sensitivity to the needs of these farmers, regardless of, like, you know, if you've never visited a farm, I would encourage you to do it. For one, you're welcome to come to Big River Farms. I'm happy to give you a tour, just to just kind of see the intensity like of crop planning, and only for you to not know if you're going to be able to make any income. But then the leaf, once again, it's a guaranteed market, and it gives those farmers that guaranteed income that, you know, they're not just going to be thrown that number and expected to make that money. But David and his team, they come out, they're on the ground working with these farmers. Big River Farms also support farmers as well with the technical support. And also wanted to address the environmental and economic impact. So when you support local food systems, we're not asking farmers, we're not, you know, paying for extra fossil fuel for it to be driven far away. Does anyone in this room know how a tomato is turned red in the grocery store? It's not picked red. But when you buy local foods and you see that tomato is red, it was picked just within 24 hours or less. And that nutrient density that stays in that food, you are able to consume it right away. Whereas foods that are being traveled far away, you don't know when it was picked, and it can't be picked at its best, at its peak. So economically and environmentally, the LEAF program just supports all the different aspects, and I think it's such an important program for our farmers. And on top of that, our farmers, they speak multiple languages. We run the Emerging Farmers Conference, and this year we provide eight languages simultaneously, different languages and interpretation. And this is like really important because most of those farmers know David. They know the Good Acre. They know this is a place that has that infrastructure. It's really rare for you to have a program that actually has cooler, you know, space for farmers to drop it off, because that's also a barrier for many farmers when they pick food. They don't have a cold storage space. The Good Acre has that. So they're not just providing this financial and programmatic aspect, but they're providing infrastructure. So an awesome conference. I think it's a great program, and I hope that you guys would really highly consider it. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Our next testifier is Jane Winsberger. Hi, Jane. Welcome to the committee. If you can please identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Thank you so much for having me here. Good evening, Madam Chair and the members of the committee. I'm very privileged to be here this evening to talk about the program which has helped me. But first of all, for record, let me introduce myself. My name is Jane Winsberger. I'm a farmer originally from Kenya and raised in a farm. I migrated here in 1998 and went to school to be a nurse before I decided to go back farming, which was my roots. I farm in Oak Grove, Kennebec County, Minnesota. I have 3.88 acres where I grew naturally organic vegetables, which I started 2021, but I was renting from another farmer 2020 until I got mine. So I'm here today on behalf of myself and many farmers who grow food for the Local Emergency Assistance Farmer Fund Program, also known as LEAF. This program was launched, as some of us have said, to help small-scale BIPOC farmers during the COVID-19 pandemic, and it was deeply impactful for me and my community. Although the pandemic has tapered off, the issues of food insecurity and market access did not. I can talk a little bit about this. We started farming as African immigrant women. I have a couple women behind me. I'm not sitting here on my own, so I'm talking on behalf of so many of them. On this time, we were trying to farm, but we didn't have where to sell, so everything was rotten. So then David, I'm somebody who wants to talk because most of my people don't talk the language. They have a language barrier, and even the documentation they don't have. So I started looking for a market which I couldn't go through. So I came to Good Acre, talked to David, and invited him come and see where we are. He came and see the west of the products. So I'm currently a member of the Marching Farmers Working Group through the Department of Agriculture. That's an opportunity to talk to my community people about the farming in Minnesota. Not only do we identify the barriers budding farmers have, but we advise the department on ways to improve equity and access for farmers like me. So some of identified barriers I faced alongside my community are access to markets and negotiable prices for producers. So the LEAVE program does not help farmers like me secure a market, but it provides food for the family. You heard David talking about cultural food. Most of us, when we come from Africa, we need to eat the food we're used to eat. So when we have somebody who comes to see what kind of cultural food, it gives us a morale to start farming. So I cannot stress enough that there is no shortage of farmers like me who have the knowledge and ability to grow food. We want to find our market, and the LEAVE program has helped us to do so. So I ask for your support in this funding. The Good Hecka LEAVE program funding means a lot to underserved communities as we do not get through other markets. I've heard some talk about markets. I don't know where they are, so we can go there. But now we have LEAVE, and that's who we are focusing. All the farmers from my community, they are farming for LEAVE. So on behalf of other farmers who might be a little nervous to come to this, I want to thank you so much for considering us, even going ahead to talk about emerging farmers in the great state of Minnesota. So I'm just requesting that instead of giving LEAVE just one time funding, can it be continuous? Not too much to ask, just because it's providing for the communities around. Give them this funding continuous, so we don't come here to testify, but we come here to say thank you for what you have done. Thank you so much.
All right. Seeing no further testifiers, do we have anyone from the public that would like to testify?
Yes.
Please identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representatives. Ben Doherty from near Northfield, Minnesota, Open Hands Farm. As I've listened here tonight, a few things have come to mind. One, I imagine you're aware that fruit and vegetable producers, you've heard from several fruit and vegetable growers tonight, and I'm trying to keep this short because I understand that it's late. In the fruit and vegetable industry, there are no government supports for price. We have plenty of other support and programs, which has been wonderful, like I mentioned, for our operation. When I hear about all of the programs that were discussed tonight, I often think about how, as a government and as a society, we support commodity production. We don't generally support what we call specialty crop production so directly. And so I think one of the things that's spectacular about Minnesota is that we have supported these programs in the past. And I fully understand the budget concerns that have been raised, and I'm not aware of what percentage these asks are of the omnibus. But I want you to remember that, you know, as a small vegetable grower on less than 20 acres, you know, I compete with California prices with growers that are growing 1,000 and 5,000 acres of the same vegetables, you know, and we're far more mechanized on our small farm than most vegetable growers our size, and we still just can't compete on price. There's an issue of scale that I think you probably all understand. But when I go to any market, when I call a distributor, when I go to a grocery store, everybody always compares my price to what's coming out of California, right? You're all very familiar with this. You're all very familiar with understanding that local foods tend to be more expensive. And so we have limited markets because people want the cheapest food possible generally across the food system. We have a very relatively small niche market of where people are willing to spend a little more money. What these programs have done, which is always astonishing to me and has made such a big difference in my life and from all these other growers' life, has given us markets that don't otherwise exist for our scale to compete with the biggest vegetable growers in the country, which is who we're every day competing with. So I'm happy to take questions on that or to discuss that further, but I'm always struck by that and how exceptional I and wonderful I think it is that as a state we invest in our growers like that when it's very hard for us to compete in the open marketplace.
All right. Thank you. Yeah. Representative Sensenmayer, I forgot to mention that I see that you have an A1 author's amendment. Can you move your author's amendment?
Yes, I would like to move the A1 amendment. This gets the bill in the shape that I would like it. It's just adding some clarifying language about the percentage of the funding that would go to the Good Acre for technical assistance and what that technical assistance might look like.
All right. Discussion to the A1 amendment. Representative Jacob.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Vang. So, yeah, coming from a county commissioner position, we're always concerned about getting as much of the funding, you know, actually to the job at hand as we can. So I'm looking at this bill and I'm seeing 25% as being the administration costs, and I'm wondering why is that 25% is very high. Why is that so high, and is that really a good use of the funding?
Yeah.
Representative Sensenmayer.
Yeah, I would love to call David back up to explain a little bit more about where that funding goes to. Thank you for that question.
David, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
My name is David Van Eckhout, Farm Program Director at the Good Acre. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative. The 25% covers the cost of the program because the program has a very high touch. So when I talk about in 2022, we had 65 farmers in the program. Because they're fairly small farmers, and as a food hub, one of our roles is really to aggregate from many farmers. Those 65 farmers in 2022 made 462 individual deliveries to our facility. So each one of those 462 deliveries has to be checked in at a dock, has to be inventoried in our system. It's an opportunity to do technical assistance with the farmer on site. So we say, hey, these need to be cleaner next time, or this size is too large for cucumber. It's an opportunity to do all that educational work. Then that's put in our system, and that's distributed to hunger relief organizations, and then the farmer, of course, invoices are entered and paid. So it is a high-touch program, but that's not purely the administrative cost of the program. The cost of the program is also to do on-farm technical assistance in the field. And I did over 60 farm visits on site last year where I would offer technical assistance, everything from soil sampling and helping a farmer with fertility needs to irrigation management or even irrigation opportunities if they had none, to disease and pest identification issues. So it really runs the gamut. We're kind of our own little extension operation within our organization doing this work. Lastly, you'll also see there that it is also to spend additional funds to develop pilot programs in greater Minnesota. We've had requests from multiple organizations throughout the state. There's a couple letters of support in the materials from Beltrami County and Rice County interested in doing a similar program. So we would be working with those other organizations to develop programs in their own communities where they can work directly with the farmers in their communities.
Representative Jacob.
Yeah, thank you. So thank you for the explanation. But as I go back to my constituents, they expect me to give them a good reason on you know, where the efficiencies are and why so much of the money does not actually make it to the program at hand. So thank you.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One quick question, as time is of the essence here, and it was partially answered by the gentleman. I was intrigued by the lady that testified, and she talked about a guaranteed price. And as a farmer, that kind of got my ears up, because usually we're subject to the whims of the market. And I understand, I guess, that local produce may have a greater value than stuff shipped in from California, for example. But the guaranteed price thing, are we paying above whatever there is a market price for this type of produce, or how do you come up with the guaranteed price for your growers?
David, would you like to respond?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Anderson. Because this program grew out of the pandemic, It was meant to be a market replacement for retail farmers market pricing. So that was the development of initial market pricing, was to use those numbers as a replacement for a market that perhaps was not going to exist that year. Now, that has turned out to be, you know, consistent from year to year, the prices that we're using. It's, as you well know, it's very hard to lower farmers' prices than it is as compared to raising them. So our prices, we do guarantee a price in the program ahead of time. And that is, we have a price list. I'm happy to share that with the committee if that would be helpful. It has been adjusted, as I said, through farmer engagement and feedback over the years. But it represents a price that is a fair price and honors farmers for their labor, especially taking into account their status on a small farm and their you know, economies of scale that they have on a small farm where all work is done by hand. We honor the fact that it takes them a lot more work to do that, and we're okay with the price being a little higher for that purpose.
Representative Anderson? Representative Cha.
Yes, thank you, Chair Vang. You mentioned here that you currently have 88 participants in this program, and you're asking for $400,000. My question to you is, how many more farmers can you take on, you know, on top of the 88? And is there a waiting list of farmers for this program?
David?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative. There is, so we don't currently have 88. We've had, over the course of the 3 years of the program, we've had a total of 88 individual farms. In 2022, we had 65 farms. Currently, we have about 70 farms who have expressed interest in the program and would like to take advantage of the opportunities that the program provides. So that would, I suppose you could call it a waiting list at this point.
Representative Chop.
And given the funds, could you support those 70 new farmers in the coming year?
David?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, in a word, no. You know, not, we couldn't support 135 farms. Like, we couldn't add those 65 onto the 70 and support 135 farms at a very meaningful level. It's important for us to be able to support farmers at a meaningful level, not $500, for example. That doesn't do very much for economic mobility.
Representative Shaw?
No further questions. Thank you.
Okay. I also have a question. I'm going to take the chair's privilege to answer first, Representative Burkle. Regarding the pool of applicants of farmers, what's the application selection process look like?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I mentioned in my testimony that we work with a group of organizations that are part of the LEAF, what we call the LEAF Organizing Committee. So those are other partner organizations that helped us to begin the program. And we rely on those organizations once we have received all the applications from farmers that they want to be part of the program. We like the separation of not the good acre deciding who's in the program, but we work with our partner organizations to say, can you please determine who is accepted into the program this year? And each year, depending on demand, they have to make decisions about some of the questions that we ask on the application are, you know, how much of a percent of your income comes from farming? Because we're trying to support farmers who are having a meaningful farm operation. So in years where funding is tighter, we may say, okay, only if 25% of their household income is coming from their farm operation are we going to support them, because we're trying to support viable businesses.
All right. Representative Burkle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be quick. I know everybody wants to go on here. But and I think I kind of know the answer, and this would be for the testifier, David. I'm just curious, you mentioned like 625, you're aggregating these orders. I suppose there's scalability differences among whoever's bringing this in. But I'm just, from a food safety perspective, if you were to have any issues, how, when you aggregate those orders, is there like lots? How do you, is there a way to segregate? Do you, if there's something, I mean, in the food industry in general, you see a recall if there was a salmonella issue or something. So how do you handle that kind of a food safety situation?
David?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, so our facility complies with all food safety requirements. So we can handle food safety within our facility. We do not have staffing to be on farm with every single farmer and be working on food safety needs on farm. But once in the facility, we utilize all the standard USDA approved, I don't know, regulations.
Representative Burgo?
So thank you, Madam Chair. So FDA, you'd have that kind of inspection on site, but not on the farms directly.
David?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, yes, we would. I'm not the operations guy, so I can't speak to like which particular inspection or whether it's FDA or USDA doing those inspections. But yes, facility-wise, yes, but on farm, no.
Representative Burkle? Okay. Members, we've been having such a lively conversation. I forgot about the A1 amendment. Any further discussion to the A1 amendment? All right. Hearing none, all those in favor of adopting the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. The ayes have it, and the A1 amendment is adopted. Now, discussion to the bill. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I wasn't going to speak again, but I was just going through our packet of letters here. And this one says, I farm in Glenwood City, Wisconsin. And the LEAF program helps him. Are we helping out-of-state production here?
Representative Sensamera or David?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Anderson, that particular farmer, the reason I know who that particular farmer is because we have one farmer who has land in Wisconsin as well as in Minnesota. You would find if you surveyed the farmers that we work with, almost all of them have more than one site that they operate on. And I'll just take a second to talk about risk management for the farmers that I work with. Risk management involves having two different locations so that if you have a soil type in one location that's favorable for potatoes, you have soil at rent in another location that's more favorable for, I don't know, root crops or something like that. But that is, we don't have crop insurance. That is our form of risk management. So yes, I can think of one particular farm that does rent some land in Wisconsin, but they do not live in Wisconsin.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Well, yeah, your point is well taken. I'm fully aware of spreading out your risk, but again, we're dealing with state dollars, and if we're helping production in a neighboring state, I think that is a cause for concern.
All right. Any further discussion? Representative Sensenmayer, closing remarks?
Yeah, thank you. So I think as you've seen tonight, you know, LEAF is a program that's accessible, it's useful, and it's responsive to the unique needs of emerging farmers. And most importantly, it's a program that farmers want to see continued. So I hope we can listen to farmers and include this bill in our omnibus. And I know that there were, you know, some really good questions, good conversation tonight. I would encourage everyone to go tour the Good Acre. I think that, you know, a lot of that further discussion could be had on site. And I was just really amazed when I got a chance to tour their facilities and all the work that they are able to do. So thank you.
All right, Representative Sensenmayer renews their motion that House File 1744 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion. House File 1744 is laid over as amended is laid over for possible inclusion. Announcements, Representative Tapke.
Thank you, Chair Vang. I just wanted to say thank you to you real quick for these bills tonight. So these four bills are really focusing on local food and local food production. I want to say thanks to the authors for bringing these and everybody for being here. It's not often that we have producers here with us and a lot of folks from a really wide range of places. So thank you very much, everybody, for being here. I think there's a huge, and I'll make this quick because I knew you guys have a party to get to. And
come too.
I just think there's so much opportunity in Minnesota for our work together on larger row crop, like my family grew up on, and that kind of thing, for that type of agriculture mixed with small production agriculture all throughout the state of Minnesota. And I just love that we're taking opportunities to talk about investing in those areas and making sure that we are doing well throughout the state. So thank you, Chair.
All right. Thank you, Representative Tapke. And once again, I want to thank the producers and farmers for being here today and testifying. You guys are what makes our policy making worthwhile and purposeful and makes the work that we do better. And so thank you for being here to testify and for putting faces on the policies that we do here every day. And with that, members, I will see you tomorrow, Thursday, March 2nd, this meeting is adjourned.